Hello there, my name is Michael Hickerson, and welcome to my commentary on episode 10 of the new Doctor Who, called The Doctor Dances. It was written by Stephen Moffat, and it aired on, someday in England, and I don't know exactly when, and I guess I could have been a great commentator and gone and looked all this great information up for you, but I didn't. So, basically for the next 40-so minutes, you're going to be stuck with me, talking to you about this episode and Doctor Who. Now, I admit, when Sarah said, hey, let's split up for commentary, I thought, well, that'll be cool. I can surely fill 40 minutes of time talking about Doctor Who. Well, I've done this, goodness, I guess this is about the fourth or fifth time I've started on this, and I'm just hoping I don't run out of things to say. If I do, we'll just have a long Hartnell commentary for long sections where I'll go, ooh, wasn't it great to do so-and-so, or wasn't it awesome to do this and that? But I think I can do 40 minutes, and I won't be too intellectual about it. I'll just be here. We'll just have a good time. Sarah put a little pressure on me at the end of her commentary, saying, oh, yes, well, Michael will be doing his commentary, and of course it will be witty and entertaining. Or she said something along those lines, and I was like, oh, I have to be witty and entertaining. Okay, I guess I can do that. Okay. Anyway, we're watching the recap of the scene from last week where the Doctor and company are surrounded by the people in the gas mask for faces. And now the Doctor is trying to get out of the situation. Now, I do agree with Sarah that last week, the cliffhanger did go on a little bit long. It did seem as though there was a lot of stalking forward, of people coming forward, like, it's like, okay, we're going to have the cliffhanger now. No, we're going to have it now. No, really, we're going to have it now. And we finally got to it. And that's kind of a little bit of what we get here. Maybe that's a nitpick. I'm a big nitpicker of things. You know, maybe the nitpick here is that it does take too long for the children to, quote-unquote, go away. And to arrive on the solution. But I do like the solution the Doctor comes up with. It's a non-violent solution to the problem, and it actually works within the context of the script. So, I'm going to discuss more about this in just a second, but first, here we go to the opening credits are starting now. Okay, at this point in the series, I was really used to the opening credits. In fact, I really liked them. I kind of grew to them. I thought, wow, this is really cool. I love the Doctor Who theme song. I think it's great. I think it's one of the very distinctive theme songs in all of the television programming, and I like this take on it. I'm still not 100% sure if I'm sold on the names of the actors appearing before the title logo appears. That had never been done before. It's an okay idea. Yes and no. I still miss the fact that there is no face of the Doctor coming at you down the corridor. Or whatever, or a starfield, or whatever. The Empty Child and the Doctor Dances. I promised Sarah that when she asked me to do this, because she knew that I liked this story, that I would not go quite as gushing a fanboy as we had on the commentary for Dalek, which was basically probably just about 45 minutes of saying, golly, Rob Sherman, you sure are great. But let me just say, golly, Stephen Moffat, you sure are great. I really like this episode. I like this episode for a number of reasons. One is, I feel it's very much in the traditional mold of Doctor Who. Of all the stories that were made for the new season, this is the one that feels the most traditional. It takes place over a set period of time. You don't feel like it's an extended period for a couple of days. It takes place over about the course of one night. It feels very Robert Holmes-ish. And when I say that, that is high praise for me. Robert Holmes, I think we would all agree, or most of us would agree, or if you've seen a lot of the old Doctor Who, you would understand. Robert Holmes was the most consistent writer for the original series of Doctor Who. Yes, he had some clunkers in there, like the Crotons, or, goodness, the Space Pirates. But those were early scripts, and I kind of chalked those up to the script editing. Even another personal favorite of mine, Carnival of Monsters, is not that well regarded among the fandom, but I like it. But all of Robert Holmes' stories seem to be about well-crafted, they were about ideas, things were happening, there was emphasis on character, but there was also a good emphasis on plot. And I think that this story gets a good emphasis, a good balance of you have these characters, you have Captain Jack introduced, who I'll get to later in great detail, and you have the Doctor explored, the Rose explored, you have the girl who turns out to be the mother explored. They all work well. There's some little character things that are dealt with here and there and everywhere in the story. Nancy is the name of the girl who turns out to be the mother of the Empty Child. And again, if you're watching this and you haven't watched the entire episode yet, I recommend that you seriously consider stopping now. Watch the episode all the way through, and then come back and listen to the commentary. I'm going to try to avoid what I've normally done, which is to spoil the entire season. I'm going to not go forward and assume that you have seen all the way to the end of the season, so hopefully that will help things. But back to my point. Robert Holmes wrote some great scripts, very frightening scripts at times, because Robert Holmes had this way of playing with things that were quote-unquote safe, that made you feel safe, but turning them into unexpected horrible things. For example, Terror of the Autons, where the police turn out to be villains, turn out to be Autons. Spearhead from Space, shop dummies come to life. That's a scary kind of a concept. That kind of works here because we have this gas mask. It's a thing that's supposed to be of safety. It's to protect you. Now, it is a little scary, yes, because, you know, you're wearing it because of an attack. It's taking place during the Blitz. But it's a safety thing. It's a familiar thing, you know. And it becomes very scary here. And, you know, the transformation in episode one really was one of the pivotal moments of the first season of Doctor Who for me. I really feel like that there were times this season when the series was trying very hard to be what it was in the 60s. And what I mean by that is there are some, seem to be some moments from the 60s and the 70s that a lot of people in the UK are very aware of. It's kind of like a collective unconsciousness, like they're aware of certain scenes. It would be almost like in the US of the, you know, where were you when the episode of Who Shot JR aired on Dallas? The Sea Devils Rising, the first appearance of the Daleks, the Cybermen walking down the streets of London in the invasion, the Daleks invading London and Trafalgar Square in the Dalek invasion of Earth. These are things that are very memorable and exciting and kind of leave you with a visual kind of a feeling about it. And I think the series was trying very hard at first to get this, especially with Aliens of London and World War III, where you had a lot of the ship flying. And I noted this at the time of, you know, this was the response to it of, we want to have something memorable, we want to have something exciting and thrilling, and people go, wow, I remember when that ship flew through London, and I remember when Big Ben was destroyed by the ship. And I think this works better. It's more effective, because it's a more subtle kind of horror. I mean, people remember from Terror of the Autons that little ugly doll coming to life and strangling someone. And that's kind of what you remember here. You remember this kind of this creepy child who is looking for his mummy and can take over anything. He takes over the cassette player, and he can project his voice into the telephone and through the wireless and do all these interesting things. And we're not really given a lot of explanation into why that happens. It just happens, and it's very interesting, and it's very creepy, and it makes for a very disconcerting feel to the episode, which is very much like a Robert Holmes thing of, we're taking things that are familiar and that you see in everyday life, but we're spinning them just a little bit, we're tweaking them just a little bit so that they are scary and they are interesting. And I really like that this series did that. I like that Stephen Moffat paid homage to that, to Robert Holmes, in this story in that way. I don't know if that was an intentional choice of his or not. If it was, great. If not, then I'm probably overly intellectualizing this and thinking too much, and you're probably thinking, okay, let's get back to that wacky fun guy who asked Nicola Bryant to call him. So here we go. First one of the commentary. Hey, Nicola Bryant, if you're listening to this, hey, call me. I'm just saying. Okay. Seriously, I think I need to get t-shirts made up of that. So if I do go to a con, you'll know who I am when you see me. You know, right. Now, Sarah made a lot in her commentary, and I kind of am going to respond to her commentary in some ways, and she doesn't have the ability to respond to mine, because I'm recording this after we've recorded all of our commentaries for this set. Unless she hides one on there as an extra commentary. About the kind of the subtext, the gay subtext or the gay issues that are brought up in the show. You have the man who they say, oh yes, you know, you think that your wife is carrying on with the butcher, but you really are. And it's, I think that it works pretty well for Doctor Who to do this. You know, it's not judging, it's not condemning. It's pretty much like the Doctor. The Doctor just comes in and he reacts to things and he reacts to people and he reacts to situations. He doesn't judge, he doesn't condemn, he doesn't say, oh, you're wrong, oh, you're right, yada, 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 whatever. It just is in there. And I don't think that people were going to get that unless you're looking for it. I think it still works as a children's show. There's the adventure, there's the drama of being caught up in, will the Doctor defeat this thing? What's happening? What's going on? Can we stop it? Oh, this is a great moment where the voice is coming through and the tape, the reel-to-reel is spinning. And the Doctor turns around and realizes the child has gotten into the room somehow. And I really like this. Very good stuff. This would be a good time to maybe comment a little bit on Captain Jack, because we're seeing him here in these scenes. I first heard about Captain Jack online, and he was introduced last episode. And I have to admit, at first I was kind of skeptical. Not a big I think part of my problem is that I was very turned off on the idea of a male companion in the 80s. The last two that we had really could burn you out on the concept of the male companion. We had Edric and Turlough. Edric, who, well, he was Edric. He was just annoying and a prat and not very well written. And I'm not, you know, I think the best description that I ever got of Edric was Matthew Waterhouse played him as this person who was a fan of Doctor who was just stunned that he had the good fortune to be part of the show. And that really sums up Edric. And so when I heard that John Barrowman, who plays Captain Jack, was going to Hartman, he was a fan, I was like, oh, please, 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 not another Edric. Not someone who's just happy to be there. Oh, I'm so happy to be part of the show. It's great to be part of the show. I can't believe my good luck. No, he really played this very well. I liked the character of Jack Harriman. But, you know, and I don't know why he's called Captain Jack by the fans, but, you know, hey, it's caught on, it kind of works. I don't know if that's supposed to be some kind of Jimmy Buffett reference. I'm totally tragically uncool and totally unhip, so I will not get half of the cool and hip people references that are out there. Sorry about that. I had to adjust the microphone there for a moment. Don't want it to slip off and you not be able to hear me. And then we had Turlough, who was interesting at first, but once they got past the Black Guardian trilogy, they had no idea what to do with Turlough. They were like, well, okay, he's conflicted. And that was really kind of the problem that I think that we had with the Davison companions, is that they started off strongly, and then they just weren't well written, especially the male companions, because they've got to be, oh, they are conflicted, and their loyalties, and, you know, Edric changed loyalties as often as he changed, you know, as some people change pants. You know, it was like, oh, I'm with you. And Captain Jack, even though in these episodes he's kind of a rogue player, and you don't know exactly where he stands, and he's kind of a rival to the Doctor. He's kind of an embodiment of everything the Doctor could be if the Doctor was, you know, the man about town, flirting with the ladies, hitting on Rose, that kind of thing. Jack becomes very loyal to the TARDIS crew. He becomes part of the crew as the series progresses. He does not change loyalties. He doesn't join with the Selene in Boomtown. He doesn't side with the Daleks. You know, he's very loyal to the Doctor and Rose, and you can kind of see that he is hurt when events happen in The Parting of the Ways, which, since I just said I wouldn't spoil anything, and I almost spoiled it. Almost give away some spoilers. Oh, you just really have to watch it out with me. I have no spoiler warning. And as you may have found out, you'll find out later, these commentaries can go into the absurd and completely PG-13 to R rating very, very quickly. So, but I'm trying to avoid that, trying to make this a more family-friendly commentary. But, you know, and we've made it for 13 minutes, and I haven't cussed once. So we're doing pretty good, I think. Yeah. Okay. How long has it been since I asked Nicola Bryant to call me? I don't know. I don't know. Probably not long enough. Probably, you know, because I think the restraining order says I have to wait like 10 minutes between pleas. As I'm watching on screen, Nancy has gone and she's confronting the group of children, the orphans, who in the first episode went from house to house breaking in and stealing food and supplies from people during the Blitz. And we're slowly seeing why Nancy takes care of these kids. We'll find out later why she does, which I've already given that away earlier in the commentary, so I don't know why I'm acting all mysterious now, like, oh, but hey, like, you haven't fast-forward, you know, like, you're going to fast-forward through all this. The Empty Child and the Doctor dances. Okay, I'll admit, when I first heard the news that the Doctor Who was coming back, I was excited. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, I'm a Doctor Who fan. I've been waiting 16 years for new Doctor Who. Got teased a little back in 1996 when they had the Paul McGann movie. That had a lot of potential, a great deal of potential. I don't really mind the half-human stuff. But I haven't really watched it since 1996, so I really do need to go back and rewatch it, because I believe Sarah and I are going to do a commentary on the telemovie at some point, because that was the first time that our little Doctor Who fan group ever got together, and it took years before we expanded it out to the third, which is Brian, who appears on another one of these commentaries. And let me just give you a shout out there, Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing? Hope you're hearing this, and I hope that you enjoy it. And, you know, we would get together at my little house, and Sarah has revealed the address of that on another commentary, which feels sorry for the resident who lives there now, who's probably going, why the hell are these 10 people showing up at my house? Yeah, I doubt that 10 people are going to show up. But anyway, I was very excited about the new Doctor Who series, of it coming back and being on the air. And as an American fan, I never really had what I would call the same experience as the British fan. And I think that the two-parters in this series came close to it. I found Doctor Who when I was 12 years old and living in Northern California in San Jose. And it was on daily on KTH Channel 54, which if any of y'all from Channel 54 ever happen to get hold of this, thank you very much for your dedication in the 80s to Doctor Who, and you're continuing to show it for all these years since then. I had to move away, but, you know, in the 2 years that I lived there, I got to see a lot of Doctor Who. I got to see just about pretty much every episode. There were only a couple that I missed, you know, due to the fact that since Doctor Who was my thing, if I got in trouble, I was grounded from watching it. But in the course of about 2 years, I got to see every available complete story on Channel 54 and KTH, and I really, really liked it. But I never had the experience of some of the UK fans where you have to wait a week between episodes. And I think that these stories kind of encapsulate that a little bit. I think part of what made Doctor Who so memorable and so great was the fact that you only got one piece a week of a multi-part story. I know that during the Davison years, they went to twice a week. But, you know, I never really had that experience of wondering, how are they going to get out of the cliffhanger? How are they going to have it? Because I always knew, okay, well, tomorrow night at 7, they're going to be part 2. Or if I was watching the Saturday Night Late Night Doctor Who feature, where they showed complete stories in episode format, which is the way that God intended for episodes to be shown. Movie format, oh, God. Just, oh, please, no more movie format. I think if they were made as 25-minute segments, they should be shown as 25-minute segments. If they're made as 45, you know, show it to the cliffhanger. The cliffhangers are an essential part of Doctor Who. But I never got to have the experience of watching Doctor Who with cliffhangers and having to wait a week and not having this instant gratification or being able to instantly find out what's going to happen next kind of thing. And that was something that I liked about this series, even though it hasn't been shown in America yet. And somehow it magically appeared on my hard drive. I don't know. It just sort of migrated here. I think clever fairies put it here for me. And I thank them for that. The only thing that really came close was during the 40th anniversary, the online story, The Scream of the Shalka, where you got an installment each week for me, you know, where, you know, you watched it and you had to wait. And you watched it and you had to wait. And that was really fun for 6 weeks. And that's why I think I enjoyed the two-parters a good deal about Doctor Who, was they all built to the cliffhanger. And there was this, you know, you had to wait a week to find out how it was going. And you felt like there was this unfolding text, a larger story going on, which may have been why I was kind of disappointed with Parting of the Ways. But again, that's something that I will get into, or I do get into. I did get into. What am I talking about? I'm mixing up my verb tenses. It's like traveling with the doctors when you record these things, because even though you're watching these in some kind of order, this is the last commentary that I'm recording for this season, unless I decide to do an extra commentary that might be hidden as an Easter egg. Ha ha ha. Oh, look, I'm teasing you. There might be an Easter egg. Anyway, here comes a scene that's a good balance of character and action. The Doctor and Rose are trapped in a room trying to escape, which seemed like they were trapped in rooms a lot this year. And Rose says, oh, the Doctor has to dance. And then the Doctor steps down to do it and immediately is in the plot. I like how that works, the fact that the Doctor is always business, 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 and that may be part of the Rose's attraction to Captain Jack, that he's not all business all the time. And Rose holds out her hand, the Doctor steps down, and immediately is into part of the solution to the storyline and the problem that's being faced here, is why are people turning into basically zombie people? Why is that happening? And the Doctor's starting to figure it out. Now, back to my point about being very excited about new Doctor Who. I think, you know, if you listen to me for any extended period of time, I don't really stay on topic that well. I kind of wander off on tangents. And I'm not making any notes, I'm just going off on things. Oh, and here we've gone into Captain Jack's ship. I'm kind of putting that in there so that Sarah, when she's working on this, can sync everything up correctly. Since she doesn't have the benefit of having been here with me to see, oh, where did he start? Where did he stop? Where did he start? Where did he stop? But anyway, you know, it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to comment on anything scene for scene, and I'm certainly not going to say, oh, it was certainly lovely to work with so-and-so, who was the T-boy, you know. I don't think we have time for that. Well, we might. Oh, and here's the nanites, and the Doctor's starting to put together the pieces of the puzzle of what's happened and why. You know, that it's these nanites things that fly through the air, and they repair things, and the first human they came across was the little boy who had the gas mask on. So they assume that that was how human beings are, and that's why they're putting everyone back together this way. And I thought that was a very clever little twist in the story. It's very well set up. All the pieces are put in place by the end of episode one for this revelation, and it makes sense within the plot, and you go, oh, okay, that works. I like that. Very much in the Robert Holmes style. Robert Holmes was the master. He would set up. He would put everything you needed in place. You may not know all the pieces were in place, but by the end of the first episode, everything was in place that you needed to know about the story. But anyway, back to my original point. I was very excited about the new season of Doctor Who, and when they announced it, I was like, oh, well, I'll believe it when they actually start airing the things. But then as the pictures started coming out on Outpost Gallifrey about the filming and everything, I got more and more excited, and I was like, wow, it might actually be happening this time. Because it seemed like there was this cruel joke every April Fool's Day where it went around, oh, Doctor Who is coming back. And that never, ever panned out. And I joked this year on April 1st that, you know, we would have the joke of, oh, the Doctor is canceled, which the ironic thing is that Christopher Eccleston's news that he was leaving the role of the Doctor came a couple days before April Fool's, and I thought, oh, this is just the elaborate April Fool's joke. But it turns out that it's not. Oh, now here we have repeated the transformation into a person with a gas mask and Nancy's desperation